I gotta say, I have encountered a lot of misinformed individuals here in the last couple of weeks, and they think that just because it's March, it is NFL Combine season, and it is March Madness season, and while all those are great in itself, there is also a lot going on in the college football world as we know it. And last time I checked the old Apple Watch here, it says it's March 7th, and we have breaking news this week between the ACC, Florida State, and Clemson. Lots of juicy details that we're going to unpack on the show. Dan Lanning gets a new contract extension with the University of Oregon. Best believe that we're going to talk about that. I have had a lot of debates with friends and coworkers about college football becoming more and more like the NFL game. But is college football becoming the NFL? I'll get to that. And I wanted to end the show with a fun little exercise that I've kind of been thinking about for a while, but I wanted to give a list of top 10 under the radar quarterbacks to watch out for in 2025. With all that being said, welcome in to the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game, all across the Game Nashville Sports Network. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the Game Nashville wherever you get your fine listening materials. It's out there on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. And also, if you haven't already, please follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I can be found at Parker_Kelly10. Guys, I'm looking forward to this show. I'm looking forward to this show today because we could go 2 hours if we wanted to, but luckily for you, or I actually don't know how you prefer, but we're gonna try to keep it around 45 minutes to an hour, but who knows, if we wanted to, we could go 3 hours. Lots of details to unpack, and once again, it is March. Spring football hasn't even started yet, and there's so much to unpack. Let's get to the breaking news first as we kick off the show. Florida State, Clemson, and the ACC have settled their disputes as they have reached a new settlement on a new TV revenue sharing model. This was voted on Tuesday, or I believe there were discussions on Tuesday, but it was officially voted on Wednesday, an agreement that resulted in the settlement of the four ongoing lawsuits between Clemson and Florida State and the ACC. Basically, what this settlement entails, a new revenue distribution strategy. And this strategy is based on viewership, and there will be changes in the financial penalties for a team that is wanting to exit the league's grant of rights deal before its conclusion in June of 2036. So basically, in layman's terms, teams are going to be awarded revenue based on how many viewers they get. And what Clemson was upset about the whole time with the ACC was the amount of money it would cost the team if Clemson decided to leave the ACC. That number has gone down significantly, so Clemson and Florida State both get what they want out of this settlement. This solidifies the ACC and their conference membership for the foreseeable future. Now, I'm going to put that in quotation marks because this is a big win for not just Clemson and Florida State. This is a big win for the ACC and Conference Commissioner Jim Phillips. But in the grand scheme of things, this is kind of putting a Band-Aid on the whole thing because, yes, it is solidified for now, but who knows what is yet to come in about 6-7 years or so. But as we just continue to unpack some of the details of the settlement, this new revenue distribution model is going to be referred to as a brand initiative. And again, this is going to be based on a 5-year rolling average of TV ratings. And that part is going to be a little bit tricky because nowadays there are all kinds of streaming platforms out there. I've come across this frustration many a times, but if you're wanting to watch a team, they may be playing on Peacock, they may be playing on cable, they may be playing on ESPN, they may be on the CW network, Tubi, whatever. There's so many different streaming platforms out there. So this may get a little complicated when the ACC is trying to add up this 5-year rolling average because the ACC, yes, they do have that deal with ESPN. However, the ACC also has games on the CW and other streaming platforms. So this part may get a little bit tricky, but that is what this new revenue distribution model is going to be based on, or the brand initiative. That's what it's going to be based off of, a 5-year rolling average of TV ratings. 40% of the money is going to be distributed evenly among the 14 longstanding members of the ACC. 60% of the brand initiative is going to be distributed, based on the TV ratings. So basically the team that gets the most ratings is going to get the most money. Pretty obvious. These top earners are expected to see an additional $15 million or more for the teams that are going to be getting 60% of the money, the teams that are getting the highest ratings. I bet you'll never guess the ACC team that had the most ratings last season. This may come as a shock, but it was Georgia Tech. And what really helped Georgia Tech was their week zero game against Florida State in Dublin, Ireland, since that was the biggest college football game of week zero. That helped. And then, if you remember, I actually talked about this on the show last time, their 8 overtime game against Georgia the Friday after Thanksgiving. Anytime you put a matchup like that on a Friday night and it's kind of in its standalone time slot, a game that goes into 8 overtimes, you're doing yourself a favor. Georgia Tech was the most viewed team last year in the ACC. Now, I don't have the number in front of me, but you'll just have to take my word for it. Some schools, like if I'm just throwing a team out there, and I'm not doing this to pick on them, but Duke, a team like a Duke in football, or a Wake Forest, schools like that are going to see a net reduction in annual payout of about $7 million, or that could be more. So not necessarily the best case scenario for these schools, but the ACC needs to have some stability because leagues like the Pac-12, RIP, no longer exist. So conferences and conference commissioners are just trying to do what they can to keep their leagues alive. And especially when we're in this world of the ACC and the Big 12, trying to do whatever they can to compete against the big dogs in the SEC and the Big 10. And this brand initiative is set to take place this upcoming fiscal year, meaning it is starting immediately. But again, what does this mean for your lower level teams, like your Wake Forest, like your Stanfords, like your Virginia's, teams like that, Duke, they didn't really have a choice because, again, in this world of the wild, wild west, and if Clemson and Florida State didn't get their way, this could have got real ugly. This could have got real ugly. So this is a win-win for your Clemson and Florida States, and this is a win-win for the ACC and Commissioner Phillips because you're keeping Clemson and Florida State in the conference for now, and you're able to keep everything together for the foreseeable future when we have an example of not even 5 years ago of the Pac-12 not able to stay afloat and all their teams leaving to go to the Big Ten or the Big 12. It dissipated right in front of our eyes. So you got to do whatever you can to keep your league intact. So I think this was the best case scenario for Commissioner Phillips and the ACC. You reward Clemson and Florida State because they are big brands. So they're going to be the beneficiary of a deal like this, but you're also keeping the league intact. And that is the most important thing in times like this. There is also a separate success initiative that was outlined in this article that I read on ESPN.com. And the success initiative, it was a fund that was actually approved in 2023, but this basically rewards schools for postseason appearances in either the college football playoff or the NCAA March Madness basketball tournament. Football is clearly going to get a larger chunk of the pie, about 75% to be exact. Football is going to get 75% of the league's TV revenue just because football is the moneymaker. And this could add about $30 million or more if deep runs in the college football playoff or March Madness could add about $30 million to a team's budget if they were to go on a deep run in either of these tournaments. I believe I mentioned it at some point. I may not have, but I'm going to mention it now. So I talked about SMU and how they basically didn't get any of the ACC TV revenue because they just were looking to join a power conference. Stanford, Cal, and SMU were the new additions to the ACC last season. They all took a reduced portion of the TV money over the next 6 to 8 years just to be members of the ACC. However, SMU, since they made the college football playoff, they were able to earn $4 million in the success initiative just by making the tournament. Now, obviously, if they would have went a little bit deeper, let's say they beat Penn State and they go on to win and they keep going, obviously, they would get more money. The goal here basically is to close the gap between what the SEC and the Big Ten are doing. Now, from a 30,000-foot view and using foresight here, that's a pretty big task. And to be quite honest, I think it's impossible at this point. But it is certainly a step closer for your teams like Clemson and Florida State, and Miami, and North Carolina, your bigger brands in the conference. And again, here was the key sentence that I read in that ESPN article. And I want you to listen closely. Although the settlement will not make substantive changes to the grant of rights, it is expected that there will be declining financial penalties for schools that exit before 2036, with the steepest decrease coming after 2030. I know this for a fact. I did mention on this very show, college football fans, circle the year 2031 on your calendar. 2031, and I'm saying this March 7th of 2025, 2031 is going to be a big year because the exit fee is expected to drop below $100 million after the 2029-2030 season. It's actually expected to be around $75 million, which is way less than if Clemson and Florida State were to leave the ACC, let's say, this year. I believe that number was around $520 million. I know it was for sure over $500 million. But that is a huge decrease in money. And the reason 2031 is going to be such a big year is because that's when a lot of these TV contracts with the other power leagues, and that's when the college football playoffs first contract with ESPN, that's when that expires. So this is going to be a really big year. So just remember, 2031, because that's when we may see a Clemson or a Florida State decide to leave the ACC, or who knows, something else could happen. But just have that date circled on your calendar. Just keep it in the back of your head. But overall, this is a huge win for the ACC and Commissioner Phillips. The league was expected to fall apart when Florida State and Clemson started suing the league. No one knew what was going to happen. No one knew what was going to come of it. It was giant news. And college football has been so unpredictable over the last 5 to 6 years. So this is a huge win for the ACC, at least for right now. Quick sip of green tea because we still have a lot to get to on the show. And if you're roaming about the Nashville area, it did get cold once again. So got to do whatever you can to stay warm, right? News came out yesterday that Dan Lanning has agreed to a new contract with the University of Oregon, a new 6-year deal that will run through 2030, and he's going to be paid annually about $11 million, which makes him among the top 5 highest paid coaches in college football. So what the money is telling you with this is that Dan Lanning is a upper echelon coach in college football. I want to address something on the sport. There is this narrative out there, and I don't know where it's coming from, but there is this narrative out there that if you haven't won a national championship in college football, you're not elite. I don't know where it's coming from, but I'm just going to address it on here. May I remind you that there are 3 active head coaches in college football who have won a national championship, one of which won his first national championship this past season. Kirby Smart with 2. Dabo Sweeney with 2, and now Ryan Day has 1. There are 3 coaches, 3 active head coaches in the sport that have won a national championship. Just because you haven't won a national championship doesn't mean that you can't be a great to elite coach. I believe what Dan Lanning has done at the University of Oregon speaks for itself. And I just want to go through some of these. His resume. I want to go through his resume with you all. Dan Lanning, who's 38 years old, has gone 35-6 in 3 seasons at Oregon. Let me jog your memory here real quick. Do you remember back in 2021? It was Dan Lanning's first game as the head coach at the University of Oregon. And he was going against his former team in the University of Georgia. They were playing in Atlanta in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. You remember when Georgia beat the absolute crap out of Oregon 49-3 in Dan Lanning's first game as head coach? Do you remember that day? What was the feeling around Eugene and the feeling nationally surrounding Oregon after that game? Many of you thought that Oregon was overrated. Many of you, I'm sure, thought that Oregon probably wasn't going to be very good under Dan Lanning. But since that point, Oregon is 34-6, and that is, to be exact, an 85% winning percentage. They had a Pac-12 championship appearance and were very close to beating the national runner-up in the Washington Huskies. They were a win away from earning a college football playoff berth, and this was the last year of the four-team era. And then this year, they ran the table, went 13-0, won the Big Ten the first year of being in the conference. They made the college football playoffs. Some would say, myself included, that they got screwed in the playoffs because they win the Big Ten, but yet have a harder path than the team that they beat in the Big Ten championship. They got matched up with the Supernova Death Star Ohio State Buckeyes in the Rose Bowl. But that is still a pretty impressive resume for Dan Lanning. And not to mention, he's coached two Heisman Trophy finalists at quarterback in Bo Nix and Dylan Gabriel. In this era of college athletics in general, not just college football, but this does include college football, you may look at this number and say, wow, $11 million, that's a lot of money. It is. It is a lot of money. I would go as far to say that maybe it's not enough, because in this world of college athletics that we're in, and all that coaches have to deal with NIL and two transfer portal windows opening, one of which being the spring portal window that opens after spring practice ends. So after you have spring practice, Matt Rhule has talked about this a lot, and that's the reason he canceled Nebraska's spring game. Your players could get poached after spring ball, and then you're left with what's left over. All that has gone on in college athletics nowadays, coaches really don't get paid enough for all that they have to deal with. Yeah, $11 million, it's a lot of money. And Dan Lanning deserves every penny of it, because he has to deal with a lot at the University of Oregon. You have to deal with a lot in general if you're a coach at the collegiate level in any sport. There's a lot to deal with the whole NIL era and transfer portal era, all that. I'm going to get really passionate about this, so I may need to take another sip of green tea here. So, full disclosure, I went to college in Chicago in the north, and that's actually where my wife is from. And up there in Chicago, because I spend a good amount of time there, Chicago is a pro sports town. They love the NFL. They love the NBA. They love their Chicago Cubs and Chicago White Sox. It is a pro sports town through and through. They also love the Chicago Blackhawks, the hockey team up there. College sports are kind of, I don't want to say foreign, because it's not foreign. Like, there's still a lot of Ohio State fans up there. There's still a lot of Michigan fans up there. But they're just not as passionate from what I've been able to see. There is some passion up there, but they're not as passionate about college athletics as a whole as maybe some other parts of the country. So I get into this debate a lot about college football versus the NFL. And while that's not necessarily the spin that I'm putting on the argument today, I just want to address why I think, or my reasoning behind why college football is different than the NFL. Because it has been said by many that college football is becoming more similar to the NFL with the new policies and the transfer portal and paying players and contracts and revenue sharing and caps and all that. But I still want to address why college football is different than the NFL. How does college football compare to the NFL? Quick answer, it doesn't. I could just really end the segment right there, but I'm not going to. I'm going to elaborate, of course, but it doesn't. College football stands alone. Now, the NFL is great, but college football is its own entity. Here are the reasons why I think college football, I'm not going to even say I think, I know. These are the reasons why I know college football is different from the NFL. The first being the tradition and pageantry, which is the most obvious. I think about this a lot. If I was on an elevator and I had to give a quick elevator pitch to somebody who wasn't familiar with college football and I had to sell them on college football in 60 seconds, what would I do? I think I would show them a video of a Penn State wideout or a South Carolina sandstorm or anything. Them singing Mr. Brightside at Michigan, the Rocky Top running through the tee at the University of Tennessee. I think I would just show them a video. Find the best video I could find of any college football tradition and just show it to them. But the tradition and pageantry of college football speaks for itself because each school has their own different gimmick that they do. They have their own chants and cheers and traditions that they do. And while there are passionate fan bases in the NFL, you cannot deny that the tradition and pageantry that you see in college football is not replicated or mirrored in the NFL. It is just not. The Philadelphia Eagles, that is one of the most passionate fan bases I've ever seen. But what you can tell a staunch difference if you're watching a Penn State wideout game at night versus watching a Philadelphia Eagles-Cincinnati Bengals game. You can tell the difference in atmospheres and tradition, chants, and the crowds. You can tell a difference. So that's reasoning number one. Reasoning number two, college football is tribal. What do I mean by that? I think this was an excellent point brought up by Joel Klatt, and I really think he does a great job of outlining this, but college football is tribal. And what I mean by this is I grew up a University of Tennessee fan. So my dad, he went to the University of Tennessee. So we consider ourselves volunteers. After all, we do live in Tennessee, the volunteer state. My dad went to the University of Tennessee. He is a volunteer. Now, we live in Nashville, so we grew up Titans fans as well, but we wouldn't say we are a Titan. We wouldn't say that. Just like I'm going to stick with the Pennsylvania theme here. If you went to Penn State, you are a Nittany Lion. If you're an Eagles fan, you don't say you are an Eagle. We are kind of tribalized by our college teams. We are a Volunteer. We are a Bulldog. We are a Tar Heel. We are a Golden Bear. You don't say we are a Brown or we are a Panther. It's not the same. College football is tribal and the NFL is not. Here's a point that I'm really excited to make. If you notice in college football, you have 4 years of eligibility. Now you could be like Diego Pavia and sue the NCAA and, you know, return for your 18th year of eligibility. Obviously there are cases. But typically, you get 4 years of eligibility. Now, they're talking about wanting to expand to five, and but that's kind of whatever. You typically get 4 years of eligibility. So, players' careers in colleges, or at college, are not as long as they are in the NFL, let's say. So, in college, you could see a player play for 3 years and then go off to play 10-plus years in the NFL. In college, your coaches are kind of the stars because you can go around and name the head coaches of different colleges, but if I asked you who Clemson's right tackle was, you probably couldn't tell me. Coaches in colleges stick around a lot longer and have longer careers at their respective schools. In the NFL, it's more so players are the stars rather than the head coaches. Because I've personally met a lot of people that pick their NFL team based on who they have at quarterback or who their running back is or who their star wide receiver is. In college, that's not really the case. So I believe that in college, head coaches are your stars, and in the NFL, players are more so the stars. This is one I'm really passionate about. Why I'm so passionate about college football, and why I'm so passionate about, or why I was so against the 12-team playoff in the first place, was I wanted the emphasis to be put on the regular season, because what is so meaningful to me as a true diehard college football fan, it's about Saturdays in the fall. It is about watching my team play on a cool, crisp fall afternoon, tailgating, watching the band, watching the fans. That's what it's about. Saturdays in the fall. That's what college football is Saturdays in the fall. And that's why I believe college football is separate from any other sport. Any other sport you want to name. The NFL, the NBA, college basketball. We're in the month of March. I know there are a lot of you who don't watch college basketball in the regular season, but you watch March Madness, right? Other leagues like that, the NFL included, their regular season is built for the postseason. That is the most important part of their league. College football, the most important part of the sport, at least to me, is the regular season. That's what it's about. It's about Saturdays in the fall. That's what this is about. And this last point that I wanted to make kind of ties into the whole tradition and pageantry thing. But the atmosphere of college football venues, they're just different. One of my favorite bowl games, and it's only been around 2 years, but it is a huge success. The Pop-Tarts Bowl. Having a live mascot that gets put in a toaster and eaten by the winning team at the end of the game. You don't get that, and you don't get that in any other sport. The Pop-Tarts Bowl. They don't have that in the NFL. They don't have that in any other league. The atmospheres and the traditions and the gimmicks and the fun and the fandom, it is just different in college than it is pro. That is the bottom line. There's something about playing for your university and repping a university and the students. In the NFL, yeah, you're playing for a team, but you're also playing for a contract. And I know that in college, yeah, the players are getting paid nowadays, but the bedrock of the sport was you know, before NIL was even introduced, players would commit to a university and they'd play for that university. That is why I think college football is way different than the NFL. Yeah, are there parts of it that are becoming more like the NFL? Sure. But overall, college football stands alone, and it is different than the NFL. One more thing I wanted to get to. So, and this is not going to be in any particular order, but this is just a fun exercise I wanted to do. I made a list of 10 under-the-radar quarterbacks to be on the lookout for in 2025. Again, this is in no particular order, and I'm not going to cherry-pick here. I could have mentioned quarterbacks like Carson Beck in Miami. I could have mentioned quarterbacks like Arch Manning at Texas, who everybody is going to be looking out for this year. I could have mentioned DJ Lagway, one of the more highly anticipated players by the fans in this upcoming season. I could have done that. I wanted to come up with a list of 10 quarterbacks that you may not be as familiar with right now. Again, keywords under the radar. I wanted to come up with 10 under the radar quarterbacks that you should be on the lookout for to make noise in 2025. The first one, Darian Mensa at Duke. He was a transfer from Tulane, was a freshman last year, had over 2,700 passing yards, which ranked top 50 in the country, again, as a true freshman, had 22 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. Really good at not turning the football over, did a great job of protecting the football. But this guy had a lot of talent and still has a lot of talent. And I'm interested to see what he does at Duke, because Duke, again, had a really solid defense this year, had a really good running game. And Malik Murphy was decent for him this year, but I really think that they could take a step forward and making some noise with a Darian Mensa at quarterback. And for those of you who watched Darian Mensa at Tulane last year, you know, even if you've played with Darian Mensa in NCAA 25, like, you know that there's something there. So Darian Mensa is a quarterback that you should be on the lookout for next year. Next person on my list, Thomas Castellanos at Florida State. Thomas Castellanos is on his third school, started at UCF, went to Boston College last year. Now he's back in the state of Florida at Florida State. The reason I put him on this list is I believe Thomas Castellanos is a solid quarterback. Now, I think he's a better runner than he is a passer, but I think he is a viable dual threat option. Florida State is playing Russian roulette again with the transfer portal. It worked out for them great 2 years ago. Did not work out so well for them this past season. And now they're bringing in a transfer quarterback from Boston College and Thomas Castellanos. Isn't going to work out for them. It hit for them 2 years ago. Didn't hit for them last year. So I think that is why I put him on the list. No one knows. No one knows how this is going to work out. I think the talent is there. I'm interested to see what he does with Mike Norvell in Florida State. Again, it's important to remember, Florida State brought in Gus Malzahn to be their offensive coordinator. How will Thomas Castellanos pair with a Gus Malzahn? That is still to be determined. Again, why I put him on the list. Oh, this next guy. I was really high on this past season. There are some things that he needs to work on, but the talent's there. And that's Jake Retzlaff at BYU. You know, he kind of got famous last year for being the first Jewish quarterback at a Mormon institution. But Jake Retzlaff, I watch him, and I see just in the way that he moves and operates on a football field, it reminds me of Bo Nix. And I'm not making the direct player comparison, but I'm just saying I see flashes of what Bo Nix did. I see that in Jake Retzlaff. Now, Jake Retzlaff had just under 3,000 passing yards last year. He had 20 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. He definitely needs to lessen the turnovers. And he had a 58% completion percentage. That needs to go up as well. But he also added 6 touchdowns on the ground. And BYU was a huge success for 3/4 of the way through the regular season. Then they fell off a little bit, but then they beat Colorado in the Alamo Bowl. So they ended up going out on top. But BYU had a really strong defense last year. I think if Jake Retzlaff can take another step, that BYU could potentially be knocking on the door of a potential college football playoff berth, because after all, the Big 12 is unpredictable. I've talked about it at length, and we're going to see some other Big 12 quarterbacks that are on this list. The next one being a Big 12 quarterback, and Sawyer Robinson at Baylor. Now, this is a guy that I've been very, very high on. He was top 25 nationally in passing yards, had 28 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. Dave Aranda was on the hot seat last year, if you remember, at Baylor. And then he accomplished a winning season, went to a bowl game versus LSU in the Texas Bowl, against his former team nonetheless. And Sawyer Robinson, I thought, played really good football last year. So I think he is absolutely a quarterback that you should keep an eye out for. Sawyer Robinson at Baylor, remember that. Now, full disclosure on this one, I don't know how to pronounce his first name. The quarterback at Texas Tech, Baron Morton, I believe that's how you say it. And I apologize if I mispronounced that first name. Baron Morton finished top 16 in the country in 2024 in passing yards with over 3,300 yards, had 27 touchdowns, also added 1 rushing touchdown on the ground, had 8 interceptions. I talked about Texas Tech and what they did in the portal and the investment they made in their football program and how they were my dark horse to potentially win the Big 12 this year. Baron Morton, watch out for not only him, but watch out for Texas Tech. They're my dark horse. And again, remember, I'm not saying that Texas Tech is going to win the national championship. I'm just saying the Big 12 is so unpredictable every year, anybody could win it. And Texas Tech, the investment that they made in getting guys out of the portal, filling needs where they needed to fill needs, the investment that they made in their football facilities and the coaching staff, I think they're going in the right direction. Baron Morton at Texas Tech. Luke Altmyer at Illinois. Year 3 in the system up there. I've been really high on Illinois coming into this season. I had Illinois on my list of sleeper teams heading into the 2025 season, if you remember that episode that I did. Year 3 in the system, did solid numbers up there last year, 22-6 touchdown to interception ratio. Now he is losing 2 of his top targets in Pat Bryant and Zachary Franklin. But, again, I've been really high on Illinois. They've always had a solid defense under Brett Bielema. Now I want to see what Luke Altmyer does in year 3 at Illinois. Another Big Ten quarterback, Fernando Mendoza, transferred to Indiana from Cal. If you remember, that I believe that was around January when that happened. But he was really solid at Cal. He is on NFL scouts' radar heading into next year's draft. We saw what Kurt Cignetti did with a guy like Curtis Rourke, who took him from a Group of 5 school in Ohio and turned him into a top 10 Heisman finisher. I want to see what Kurt Cignetti is able to do with a guy like Fernando Mendoza, who some might consider him maybe a little bit more talented than a guy like Rourke. But I think this is going to be an interesting marriage. Can Indiana have repeat success of what they did last year? I'd love to see it. So, Fernando Mendoza, a guy that I'm going to be looking out for. Staying in the Big Ten, Demon Williams Jr. at Washington. Now, this guy was a freshman last year, I believe. He got some solid work last year, but if you remember, they still had Will Rogers up there for a little bit. Will Rogers is gone. Demon Williams really took off the last 2 games of the season. Against Oregon, last game of the regular season, he went 17-20 for 201 yards and a touchdown. against Louisville in the Sun Bowl. This was the real stat popper. 26 of 32 for 374 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception, and he also added a touchdown on the ground. So it had a 5-touchdown performance in Washington's bowl game. He was phenomenal towards the end of the season. This guy's potential is sky high. Demon Williams at Washington is a player that I'm really excited to watch in 2025. Two more, and we're going to go down to the SEC for this. Do you remember that Jackson Arnold, the quarterback at Oklahoma, a lot of people left him out to dry. You remember that he transferred to Auburn, right? So when I saw the news, this made me think it's kind of like a reverse Bo Nix situation. Bo Nix left Auburn to go to Oregon to realize his true potential. Jackson Arnold had left the system at Oklahoma because he wasn't having the success that out of high school that one thought he might have. And now he's going to Auburn with Hugh Freeze. So we had Bo Nix, who left Auburn to realize his potential. Now we have Jackson Arnold, who's going to Auburn to kind of rejuvenate his career. The marriage with Hugh Freeze is going to be really interesting to watch. Jackson Arnold, I still haven't sold my stock on him. I know a lot of people have left him out to dry, but we'll have to see what happens. He is still the five-star prospect that he was coming out of high school. The talent is still there. So we'll have to see if Hugh Freeze can get that out of him. But Jackson Arnold at Auburn. And the last guy that I'm already banging the drum for now. He's got big shoes to fill, but it's Austin Simmons at Ole Miss. Austin Simmons, now, we talk about potential a lot with all of these guys, really. The potential with Austin Simmons is through the roof. He's got a big body frame. He's got a lightning-quick release. He's a great runner. Austin Simmons actually played baseball at Ole Miss for a little bit. He was a lefty, so lefties typically get put on the mound. And what really caught my eye about Austin Simmons was, if you follow college baseball, he pitched against Georgia, and Georgia had some power bats. And Austin Simmons struck out quite a few of those guys over at Georgia. It was a really impressive performance, was absolute flamethrower on the mound. Now we get the chance to see him as QB1 down in Oxford. And again, the sky's the limit for a guy like Austin Simmons. But he's replacing Jackson Dart. Jackson Dart, the all-time leading touchdown thrower, I believe, at Ole Miss. He's got some big shoes to fill in Oxford. But Lane Kiffin and the staff down there are really high on this kid, Austin Simmons. I am too. I know he got some garbage time cleanup duty last year, but Austin Simmons is a prospect that I'm really excited to watch heading into 2025. So again, my list of quarterbacks, I gotta stop saying that. It is 10 under the radar quarterbacks to be on the lookout for in 2025. Darian Mensah at Duke, Thomas Castellanos at Florida State, Jake Retzloff at BYU, Sawyer Robinson at Baylor, Baron Morton at Texas Tech, Luke Altmyer at Illinois, Fernando Mendoza at Indiana, Demon Williams Jr. at Washington, Jackson Arnold, Auburn, Austin Simmons, Ole Miss. Now you take that list and you do what you want with it, but just remember that you heard these guys mentioned on this show first. We appreciate everyone that has listened to the air raid so far. Again, we're getting this thing going up off the ground. Ratings have been pretty solid so far. Just please continue to listen in and make sure to subscribe to The Game Nashville so you never miss an episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. And there are some other great podcasts that some of my coworkers have started. So make sure to check those out as well. And again, make sure to follow me on the socials at Instagram and Twitter at Parker_Kelly10. It's been a busy time here at the station. Got a lot going on, but we'll try to get you another episode of the Air Raid with Parker Kelly here shortly. So stay on the lookout for that. And we will look forward to talking to you soon.